This is the Daily Radio Ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel, Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of Ephesians. Now, with the conclusion of his message entitled Children of Light, here's Pastor Sandy in the book of Ephesians chapter 5.
As Christians, we don't just change environments. We don't just go from in the dark to in the light. Salvation is more than just moving into a lighted room. Something happens deep within you when you come to Jesus. God turns a switch on in your heart. You become transformed from dark to light. God moves His fire into the furnace of your heart. Ever notice that heart and hearth are the same word? And this enables us not just to shine for a few hours until the glow wears off and the shine starts to cease. No, this equips us to walk as children of the light in a dark world, even in the midst of evils that breed in dark places. You remember the story of Moses? Exodus 33, verse 18 tells us that Moses asked God, "Please show me your glory." And God obliged him, at least to a point. He set Moses off in a cave, and he sheltered his eyes with his hand. And he allowed Moses to see his back as he passed by. And when Moses descended from the mountain, his face glowed with a light, with God's glory. I guess you could say Moses had the opposite of a 5 o'clock shadow. I mean, his face was illuminated with the light of the eternal God. And Paul picks up on this story in 2 Corinthians 3, and he mentions this glow. He says it was amazing, but it was temporary. It faded from Moses' face. In contrast, Paul says of people who are in Christ, who have received God's Spirit, that God's glory remains in us. It isn't just a passing fancy, but we are being transformed from glory to glory. As a result, God's light now shines in us and then through us. The light of God's purity and presence, His brilliance and beauty, now shines from and through your life. There was once a cathedral lined with stained glass windows all down the sides, and each window was a mosaic of one of the saints of the church. A little girl who attended the church, she was asked in Sunday school, "What is a saint?" She replied, thinking of those windows, she said, "A saint is a person through whom the light shines through." And her definition was correct. It's Paul's definition here in verse 8. "For just as it is not enough for us to know God's love, we should also walk in His love. Likewise, it's not enough for us to just have the light of God. We also need to walk as children of light." And you see, this has some ethical, some moral implications. For we're told in verses 8 and 9, "Walk as children of light, for the fruit of the Spirit is in all goodness, righteousness, and truth, finding out what is acceptable to the Lord." Every day, you and I make a series of choices. We choose if we're going to walk in the light or lurk in the dark. Will we tell that customer the truth, or are we going to lie to make a sale? Will we confess that we were wrong, or in our pride are we going to continue to deny our failure? Will we pursue what's wholesome, or will we indulge in what's sinful? See, we're always choosing whether we're going to be in the light or whether we're going to hide in the shadows. People like to think of light and darkness in strictly a spiritual or an emotional sense, sort of as being enlightened. But you can't contemplate light and dark for long before it takes a moral turn, before it affects our behavior. You see, goodness happens in the light, whereas evil and sinful deeds fester in the darkness. Ask any police officer and they'll tell you most crimes happen when? At night, under the cover of darkness. For years I've told my kids, nothing good happens after midnight. Thus, walking in the light affects my character. This is why Paul mentions the three divine rays that blend together to make up God's light. Goodness to others, rightness before God, and truth in all things. Generosity and integrity and reliability are the three beams in God's flashlight. These are the values that shine His light. And if we walk as children of light, these are three traits that we'll prioritize in how we live and love and do business. Our generosity, our integrity, our reliability is what will attract people to the Jesus that we preach. Once there was a tragic automobile accident. A carload of teenagers were struck by a train, killed. That night, a crossing guard had been on duty. His job had been to walk out into the intersection and wave his lantern to warn off any cars of an oncoming train. After the accident, the man was arrested. He was placed on trial for negligent homicide. On the witness stand, the guard was asked, "Were you at the crossing the night of the accident?" The man said, "Yes, I was." He said, "Were you waving your lantern?" The man said, "Yes, I was." Long after the trial, the crossing guard was overheard confessing, "I'm glad I was never asked if there was a light in my lantern because the light had gone out." And this is the problem with the witness of many Christians. We're waving our lanterns, but there's no light. There's no generosity and integrity and reliability in our lives. And as a result, no one is inclined to listen to what we have to say. As one author put it, "You are the light of the world, but the switch must be turned on." We've got to shine. I love how Paul refers to goodness, righteousness, and truth as fruit. For this is what a hungry man can sink his teeth into, not just empty words, but love in action. People don't want bark, they want fruit. Reminds me of the three-day Bible conference. Great sermons were preached each of the 3 days. On the last day, a man responded to the altar call. He gave his life to Jesus. Afterwards, someone asked him, "Which of the pastors who spoke this week compelled you to come forward?" The man was startled. He replied, "It wasn't any pastor's preaching. It was my coworkers practicing." Recently, Yahoo Sports ran a story on Georgia football coach Mark Richt. In the article, the author made an amazing comment, and I quote, "There isn't any way to separate Mark Richt, the football coach, and Mark Richt, the Christian. They are one and the same, always." And then he went on to give several examples. But what a powerful affirmation of a man's character. You see, integrity is being what you say you are all the time. Now think what you will about Coach Richt. But what the article says of him is what I hope can be said of you and me. That you'll never find any separation between Bob the salesman and Bob the Christian, or between Mary the office manager and Mary the Christian, or between Sam the banker and Sam the Christian. That there'll never be any discrepancy. This is what walking as children of light looks like in a person. No foggy identities here. No misty motives, no gray areas of morality, no shadow lands to which a person escapes when they're stressed or when they're pressured. No, this man or woman is a child of God, and they are what they say they are all the time in every situation. You know, people today are searching for answers. They are open to the gospel. But you say, "Well, Sandy, the folks I talk to aren't open. They scoff and say they've heard it all before." But you see, that's the problem. They have heard the gospel, but they've never seen it lived out. And that's the gospel they're searching for. That's what would interest them if they could see it being lived out in your life. It reminds me of the Chinese farmer who went to the missionary compound to have cataract surgery. The procedure was successful. Immediately after, though, the man left town. He was gone for many months. When he finally returned, he was pulling a rope. And holding onto that rope was a string of blind men who had come for the very same surgery. The best witness for the gospel is a changed life. I hope you know your life is an advertisement for the gospel. But what if we put you on television? How many calls would we receive for more information? Listen to this poem. "You're writing a gospel, a chapter every day, by the deeds that you do, by the words that you say. Men read what you write, whether faithless or true. Say, What is the gospel according to you? When we walk as children of light, there are two results. We prove what's good and we expose what's evil. Notice verse 11. And have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather expose them. Heard of a lazy housekeeper who once complained, "My house would stay clean and uncluttered if people didn't keep opening windows and letting in the light." Hey, it's only when the light comes in that we see the dust and the stains. When the light of Jesus comes flooding into our lives, that's what causes us to see how dirty and disheveled and in disarray our life had become. Hey, when you come to Christ, the Spirit of God enters your life and opens your eyes to the love of God and the truth of God and the glory of God. And it is a thrill to have spent your whole life in the dark and then suddenly the lights come on. The heat comes on. What a revelation. Reminds me of Norena. After Hurricane Katrina hit, it was discovered that she had no electricity in her home. She was getting by with a small lamp and a single burner. It took an electrician just a few hours to get the power back on. But here's the stunning wrinkle in her story. Norena's problems were found after Hurricane Katrina, but they didn't start there. She had been living without power since Hurricane Andrew, which struck South Florida in 1992. Norena had received an insurance settlement to repair damage from Andrew, but when the money ran out, so did her contractor, and so the work was never finished. It's amazing, this woman had lived in the dark for 15 years. No air conditioning, not one hot shower in 15 years. We're in talking South Florida. When CBS News interviewed Norena, she said, "It's hard to describe having the electricity to switch on. It's overwhelming." She said she planned on letting the water get real hot and taking a bubble bath. I don't blame her. Norena's 15 years in the dark were not her choice. And yet I know folks who have deliberately spent decades in the darkness. They're more comfortable in the dark. They want to hide. And the best place to hide is in the darkness. One man confessed, "I prefer darkness over light. The darkness allows me to hide who I am and what I truly feel. In the light, all things have a chance to be revealed. Darkness makes it easier to hide. In the dark, you can't see what is coming next. The darkness is a place where you can lose yourself. Lost in the dark is a great place to be because then you are free from what you were and can be what you want." Hey, a person can hide his sin and shame in the dark. Excuses and rationalizations flourish in dark corners. Hey, as long as you're in the dark, you don't have to deal with the sins that aren't seen. But once you come out into the light, everything changes. Sin gets exposed. Attitudes you harbored in the dark are now viewed as rebellion in the light. Little compromises you justified in the darkness are now seen as hideous in the light. In the dark, certain habits were deemed innocent, but now in the light, they are recognized as a deadly cancer. You know, during the winter, northern cities, they use lots of salt on the roads to clear the roads of ice and snow. And after a time, the mixture of exhaust and salt and snow, it gets plastered onto the sides of the cars. All the cars end up looking murky gray. But on the first warm spring day, some fella, he goes out and he washes his car and he restores it to its original color. And when everyone else on the block sees the one clean car, they suddenly realize how dirty their cars had become. And as Christians, we're called on to be the one clean car. You don't have to put on the white glove. Without being condemning and judgmental, you can expose the darkness in others by simply shining your light and being a beacon for Jesus Christ. But this is where the conflict arises. For when you're sound asleep and somebody flips on the lights, what's your immediate reaction? Well, it's not a very pleasant one, is it? It's not a welcoming one. The light can be a nuisance. It can be seen as an intruder. There are three ways that people respond to the light. First, people attack. They'll hit back. They get angry at you for disturbing their comfort and for interrupting their slumber. They're liable to throw something at you. Second, people avoid. They just try to roll over and avoid you. They'll pull a pillow over their head and hope you go away. But then third, some people appreciate. They thank you for waking them up. Hey, but realize whether they attack or avoid or appreciate doesn't relinquish us from our calling to shine the light. Paul tells us to have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness. Don't get entangled with the habits and practices of this world. Rather, expose them. Be that one clean car. Notice Paul doesn't say avoid contact with the people of the world. We need to rub shoulders with lost people. How else can we shine our light for Jesus? Just don't blend in. Don't mess your lifestyle with their lifestyle. Don't adopt their values and their priorities. We need to shine our light. But when we do, let's make sure that it's sharp. The contrast is sharp and clear and decisive. Too many Christians today, rather than walk as children of light, they've become children of the twilight. They've caved in, they've compromised, and they've capitulated here and there. Rather than stick out, they work to blend in. And now, as a child of light, they're barely distinguishable from this dark world. Rather than live in the bright light of the Son of God, some Christians exist in a dim twilight of compromise. Hey, be careful when you, as a Christian, begin to bargain with this world. Don't make compromises. Reminds me of the hunter who was stalking the bear. He finally had the bear right in the sights of his rifle. He was just about to pull the trigger when the bear spoke up. He asked if the hunter was willing to negotiate. Well, the hunter was so surprised at hearing a talking bear, he agreed. The bear said, "I want a full stomach." The hunter said, "Well, I want a fur coat." And after hours of negotiation, they both got what they wanted. Yet the bear was the only one to walk away. He got his full stomach, and the hunter got a fur coat. And the moral of the story is beware of compromise. Hey, you negotiate with this world long enough, and you can expect to get taken. We need to expose evil, not get entangled in it. And then verse 12 tells us, "For it is shameful even to speak of those things which are done by them in secret." Don't even engage in the water cooler conversation. That's talking about the shameful things that happened on TV the night before. You see, there's two ways to bring shame to yourself. One is to commit a shameful act. The other is to speak casually of another person's shameful acts. It's like a guy who shares his hour-long testimony. He goes on for 59 minutes, detailing every despicable evil, every wicked detail of his sinful past. And then with that final minute, he tosses in that Jesus saved him. Don't even talk about what's shameful. I've heard some Christian testimonies that ended up in advertisement for the devil. The guy recounting the story inadvertently promoted what he was supposedly saved from. He glamorized sin, not the Savior. Hey, we drive out darkness, not by studying the darkness. Don't fall into that trap. Don't get on the internet and surf the web to learn what evils there are on the internet. That's just a quick way to get in serious trouble. An overactive curiosity will subject you to an endless pipeline of lethal sewage. Too many guys have gotten trapped by curiosity. Hey, if my goal is to clean you up, I don't need to study the slime you've been in. All I need is a bar of soap. Neither do we dispel the darkness by discussing it or by even fighting it. No, if you want to wake up someone who's in the darkness, just turn on the light. That's what verse 13 tells us. "But all things that are exposed are made manifest by the light. For whatever makes manifest is light." What a dark world needs most is not our condemnation. It's for us to walk in the light. Prisoners of darkness need children of light. Verse 14 quotes an ancient chorus. In my Bible, it's actually formatted as poetry. Scholars believe it was a liturgy, perhaps employed by Paul as maybe a baptismal song. Therefore, he says, he being Isaiah, Paul is quoting Isaiah 26, verse 19, "Awake, you who sleep, arise from the dead, and Christ will give you light." You and I are children of light. That's why we need to be wide awake spiritually. Are you wide awake to spiritual things? You know, it's interesting the things that a person can do while they're asleep. Did you know you can be asleep and still talk? You can talk in your sleep. There's such a thing as sleepwalking. You can walk in your sleep. You can sing in your sleep. You can even laugh in your sleep. You can even smile and nod at the pastor as if you're listening in your sleep. And the same is true of spiritual sleep. A Christian can be in a spiritual slumber, asleep to God, unaware of his presence, oblivious to God's concerns, and yet still sleepwalk right into the church and talk in his sleep and even sing worship songs in his sleep and laugh at just the right times in his sleep. Author Ken Hughes puts it, "It is possible to live a dreamy life of unreality in the netherland of inaction." In other words, you say all the right words, but you're still asleep. Christian musician Keith Green wrote a song entitled "Asleep in the Light." Here are the soul-searching lyrics. "The world is sleeping in the dark that the church just can't fight because it's asleep in the light. How can we be so dead when we've been so well fed? Jesus rose from the grave and we can't even get out of bed. A battle rages around us. We need to tune in to those issues that matter to God. The devil has lulled the world to sleep. It is the church that needs to wake up. We can't afford to be asleep in the light." You remember the recent downfall of General David Petraeus? Someone characterized it as hubris meets high tech. Petraeus was a retired four-star general. He was the acting director of the CIA. When adultery with his biographer became front page news, Petraeus was outed by email. An article in the Washington Post said afterwards, "There are no true secrets in the modern world. Privacy is an illusion. Every communication is potentially public. Like the gift of fire, technology is a magical device that, if not used carefully, contains the seeds of our own destruction. Emails and texts can be forwarded, archived, retrieved. The veil of anonymity is fragile." And Christians of all people shouldn't be surprised. Let me read verse 13 to you again. "But all things that are exposed are made manifest by the light." Hey, the light of God shines into every corner. You need to know there is no crack, there is no crevice in your life into which the light of God will not shine. There's nowhere in the universe where you can hide from God's all-seeing eye in his inescapable gaze. And this is why we all need to come out of the darkness and into God's light. We need to open up to the Spirit's light in our lives. We need to cultivate these fruits of goodness and integrity and reliability. We need to refuse to live in the twilight of compromise and live in the bright light of God's presence. It's time for all of us who name the name of Jesus to wake up. Let's be faithful to the flame. Let's walk as children of light.
Being on the go is something we're all accustomed to in this culture. The hustle and bustle of life seems to make the days just fly by. For most of us, our smartphones are sort of an extension of our bodies, constantly ringing and dinging, telling us where to be and what the next appointment is. The technology that we enjoy in this day and age is amazing. And while there's certainly no end to the bad things we can find online and through our smartphones, there's also some great kingdom-minded options. We'd like to invite you to download the Sandy Adams mobile app. Our mobile app is available for iPhone, Android, and Windows smartphones. Or log on to sandyadams.org and simply click on the link from the main menu. When you download the app, you'll be able to listen to the most recent messages taught by Pastor Sandy, browse the series archive, and search the archive alphabetically. Finally, when you download the mobile app, you'll also have the opportunity to join us live for our Sunday morning worship service right from your smartphone. Again, to download the Sandy Adams mobile app, simply enter Sandy Adams in the search options of your smartphone's app store, or log on to sandyadams.org and simply click on the mobile app option right on the homepage. And please join us again as Pastor Sandy continues teaching through the Bible right here on Sandy Adams Radio.